It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us this week is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Carl.
Also with us is Jonathan Ellis, political reporter and columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, nice to talk with you again.
Hey, thanks, Carl.
Well, the big story of the past week or so is the unfolding saga of the collapse of the Northern Beef Packers plant in Aberdeen. It's a complex story involving public and private entities and foreign investment. I don't know who wants to tackle this. Who wants to summarize what we know about this story so far?
Jonathan? Go for it, John.
John?
Well, it is complex, and there are a lot of different folks involved and so forth. But, you know, the whole thing started as part of the state's emphasis on value-added agriculture. You know, if you remember a decade or more ago and everyone's saying, we're raising crops and livestock and shipping them out of state, let's get that next level of profitability back into South Dakota. And so they said, you know, they and you know, Governor Round's administration and so forth said, one of the best things we can do is have this meatpacking plant up in Aberdeen that can, instead of shipping all of our livestock out, then we could do it in Aberdeen. And so I think this story really is about the eagerness of doing this project and what kinds of things needed to be done or were done in order to get this thing built. I think all along the eagerness overwhelmed maybe the financials of it or the logical business plan of it, and I think desperation at different times as it failed to do other things to keep it going or to get it done. And I think that eagerness and desperation then led to some other practices that are now under investigation. Jonathan, is that a decent start?
That's a decent start. And Carl introduced this as being, quote, complex, and it certainly is complex. I mean, where we're at now, I mean, we do understand now that there's both a state investigation and a federal investigation. Most of that, from what we gather, centers on how the state was using its EB-5 program. Now, the EB-5 program is it's a program, national program, that encourages foreign investment into enterprises in the United States, and for a minimum $500,000 investment, investors can then get whether or not if they meet certain criteria, so if a project, you know, creates jobs and does some other things, then the investors themselves are sort of expedited for a green card, which is obviously very important to people who, you know, want to come to this country. So it appears that all of this is sort of centered on that. Now, the state, at one point in time, the state ran the EB-5 program through the South Dakota International Business Institute, which was up at Northern State. The director of that, Yop Bolin, then created the South Dakota Resource Center, and he went from being basically a state employee at Northern State to an independent running the EB-5 program within one day, signing a contract with the state. And as you know, my colleague David Montgomery has been covering this and unfolding this, and in today's story, you know, they were charging a substantial amount of money to these investors, you know, to bring in this investment money. And we have to point out it wasn't just for the beef plant that they were doing this. There were some other projects, and this program has been controversial nationwide and in South Dakota before. I think if you'll recall, there have been some dairies that were using EB-5 money that had collapsed. There was one dairy in particular, and it's been a few years now, but it was started with some EB-5 funds, and ultimately a number of the workers that were supposed to, you know, part of the program is you have to create jobs, and a number of the jobs that were created had actually gone to people who were in the country illegally. So there have been some controversies, not just nationally, but also in South Dakota, regarding this program in the past.
Well, regarding the investigations regarding the state's involvement in the EB-5 program, Jonathan, do we know the nature of those investigations?
We don't, and we don't know much about anything about what's being investigated. And keep in mind that, you know, we have the former director, Richard Benda, of Tourism and Development, is dead. We don't know. Obviously, that's its own investigation about what happened there. We don't know the nature, though, necessarily of what it is specifically that the investigators are going after. But, you know, there were many different layers of how this worked. I mean, at one point in time, you know, the EB-5 program was a direct investment into a business opportunity and something that Yul Boland did when he was with the state. What they started doing was creating private entities. So here you have, and this is raising eyebrows, you have a public official, a state employee, essentially, taking this money and pooling it into these limited partnerships that were, you know, private companies. And then how that was working, instead of being a direct investment into a project from somebody overseas, what these limited partnerships were doing were they would pool the money of the investors and then make a loan or an investment directly to the project. So there are many different layers, and it's involved at some levels companies that are a company that was based out of the Virgin Islands that was owned by a company that is out of the Cayman Islands that was owned by another company that was also in the Cayman Islands but was actually controlled in Hong Kong. I mean, you know, there's a lot of complex layers to this whole thing.
One more thing about that. This whole immigration plan, you know, kind of started from the idea that a person who wished to move to the United States could move up the list if they brought certain things to the United States. The first one was particular skill. If you could cure cancer or something, then you would move up the list for this immigration. Or if you, at the very least, you wanted to have people who could be self-sufficient or help improve life for others, again, starting jobs. And so the idea of being able to invest in an American company or bring a company to the United States was the reason for moving up the list. And then I think it morphed, and it, as many of these government programs kind of do, then people say, well, yeah, we'll do that kind of on the surface, but we'll twist this around. And so it got to be kind of a pay-to-play thing where you say, okay, I can buy my citizenship for a $500,000. Actually, it's a minimum of $1 million, except in rural areas or in particular designated areas that are poor. So it's really $1 million for most of the rest of the country. And then, again, it was morphed into these pools where you'd say, well, let's all just put money in, then we'll put them toward projects. So it wasn't really the original intent of these immigration programs, and it changed to be a financing program where you could get foreign investment. We'd hold this chip out where you'd say you could gain citizenship by this. But then investors from other countries were starting to lose control of where this would go to, and it was being controlled by states or by these regional centers. And the whole thing kind of fell apart ethically, in my opinion, all over the country. And there's 280 of these regional, or some number like that, of these regional centers all over who are doing this. There's only one in South Dakota, and that's the one that we're talking about here.
What is the potential political fallout of all this? Jonathan Ellis, Governor Mike Rounds, he was the one that really was spearheading or really was pushing for the plant in Aberdeen?
Yeah, I mean, he was certainly a cheerleader for the plant, and as John said, you know, it was part of this long-standing effort in South Dakota to value-added in agriculture, and, you know, lots of people have been cheerleading for that, but certainly the plant was something that Mike Rounds was behind. You know, the political consequences are really hard to know right now because we don't know what happened. And what we do know, though, is that when he was governor, I mean, this was when the EB-5 was being run out of Northern State, and a contract was signed to basically privatize it while he was governor. So we don't know. A lot of this is going to determine on what the investigations find, if anything. But certainly, if you are somebody running against Mike Rounds, you are going to do everything you can to sort of use this to cast doubt on Rounds when he was his tenure as governor. And so this is a political liability for him, no doubt about it. It's the question of how big it's going to be.
John Hunter, do you agree?
I think it's possible, yes. That depends upon how big this gets, and there are a bunch of layers I think we haven't even seen yet, or other parts of this. And the longer the story goes on, the longer it would be associated with former Governor Rounds. So I think it's possible, yes.
Now, going back, John Hunter, this is the whole value-added thing, having a marketplace for South Dakota's beef producers. On the surface, a great idea, but why didn't it work? Is it just the economy?
Well, there's a lot of speculation on that. Governor Rounds has already said that he thought the business model was viable, but the costs kind of spun out of control. But I think there were some things. Back to my original idea of eagerness, people wanted this so badly, and I think a number of places along the way, I think we'll be able to point to circumstances where I said, okay, I know this doesn't work, but let's get the shovel in the ground. Let's get this started. Let's get, I know we don't have the financing in place yet, but let's get going because we want to indicate that it's possible. And I think in some cases there were kind of the cart before the horse. And then you get different investors, and then they lose their money and another round comes in, so then you make changes to the thing. And I think it all just kind of went ahead because they wanted it to happen so badly before you crossed all the T's and dotted the I's and do all the things that businesses normally do when you want to open a good, long-term, viable operation. So, to have opened the plant and hired people and then not have any money to buy cattle was clearly meant that they hadn't thought the thing all the way through, or that they had hoped for a miracle or some other financing thing that would have happened that they hadn't nailed down before they opened the plant.
Well, John Hunter, do you think that this could have impact on future foreign investment in the state, particularly, say, from China? I know the current governor, Dugard, has been active in taking a couple of trade missions to China over the past couple of years.
I would be an optimist on this. I do not think this would necessarily do it, because this was done through these channels that are kind of being investigated. I think you'd see more. I think what the best for everyone, of course, would be these transparent investments where everyone has their cards above the table and said, here's what it is. And even something like when Smithfield Foods, the owner of John Morrell, that's kind of a visible, open, transparent transaction. And so I tend to be an optimist on this. I don't think the problems with this would overall affect foreign investment or any investment in South Dakota agriculture.
Well, Jonathan Ellis, speaking of transparency, could the state have been, or should the state have been, more transparent in working out deals like this, the various financing with state and private partners?
Well, I'll say that, yeah, of course, and the state has made progress since this was taking place. I mean, the state has is part of the new economic development program that went in place under Governor Dugard. There is more transparency than there was before. There was a time when the state was withholding, for example, names of companies that were getting tax refunds under certain tax refund programs. I could be getting this wrong, but I believe that Bob Mercer, actually a reporter in Pure, deserves credit for sort of challenging that. But our own newspaper went to the South Dakota Supreme Court specifically against the suing this particular department that was overseeing this program because of their lack of transparency. You know, things have improved, but I'm always for greater transparency.
Well, moving on to other issues during the few minutes we have left here on the Dakota Political Junkies segment, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow said yesterday that face-to-face talks among the top four farm bill negotiators will resume this week, and she's upbeat enough to hope for a deal by Thanksgiving. John Hunter, do you share that optimism?
I think we've been burned enough by these things that I can't yet be optimistic. Most of what Congress does, as you know, comes at the last minute when a crisis is available, and so I don't think Thanksgiving is a crisis. So whatever, you know, I'd love to see it, but I don't yet share the optimism.
Has John Hunter, has any news come out yet over these negotiations?
Well, there, I mean, the things, and Jonathan's probably heard this too, there, we've heard of little things in the bills that seem to be unrelated to that. One of which, and we just talked about transparency too, where there's a provision in, I can't remember whose bill that this is, to remove a bunch of transparency and allow records to be kept under closed wraps. And so these are the kind of details that can affect the negotiations. Sometimes it's not the big things, whether how much you cut to food stamps and so forth, but things that are maybe under that next level that may delay or scotch a deal.
Jonathan Ellis, are you aware of what's happening with the Farm Bill negotiations?
Yeah, I'm aware certainly of what John is talking about. It was in the Farm Bill, the House passed Farm Bill. There was a provision in there that withholds information, a lot of information that's currently available. And so there's some concern about that. You know, here's likely if the success of this thing, if it is going to be successful, here's what's going to happen. There'll be more cuts in food stamps than what was in the Senate bill, okay, which was about $4 billion, if I'm getting that correctly. But it will be nowhere near the $40 billion that was in the House bill, okay? This is over a 10-year period. And there'll be enough there, they'll compromise on that. It won't be enough for probably a majority of the House Republicans, but potentially for the Democrats and rural state Republicans like Kristi Noem. I think that if this bill passes, it's going to have to pass with you know, a good chunk of Democratic votes and then some rural state Republican votes.
Sort of like what we saw a few weeks ago with the government shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, a blend. I mean, I think we saw that on the deal, perhaps. I think if I'm going, but memory serves right, back in 2011 on the debt limit deal and some other rare instances in which they've been able to get some stuff done there.
Well, I guess finally, on Veterans Day, retired Army officer Karina Robinson plans to make her formal announcement that she's seeking the Democratic nomination for U.S. House. John Hunter, has she been making many public appearances since announcing her interest in running for the House a couple of weeks ago?
I haven't seen any. That's not to say I'm everywhere, but I have not seen any appearances.
And Jonathan Ellis?
She was in Sioux Falls Friday, speaking at the Democratic Forum, which is a good place to start if you're running for the Democratic nomination. A good group around here in Sioux Falls to talk to, and she talked to them, you know, about her background and who she was, where she comes from, that kind of thing. So it's a good sort of intro to some local Democrats here in Sioux Falls. I do think she's probably focusing on getting that formal rollout come Veterans Day.
And John Hunter, any other Democrats who might get in that race?
Well, I always tend to look to the state legislature for the possible candidates, and there aren't as many Democrats there currently as there have been at different times. But you know, that for that U.S. House seat, it seems to be at least a launching point for a lot of people. And but I am not aware of any other Democrats who have stated interest or raising money or raising that kind of stuff yet.